wanted to talk about influence and the power of influence. Daniel's devotions this morning, I really appreciated, but I felt a little bit like he might have been over at my house in the middle of the night shuffling through my notes because he kind of took some of my ideas. So you might hear some of those ideas of what he said this morning twice. You might get to hear it again, so no problem, Daniel. I appreciated the devotions, but you did steal some of my notes, it seems like. All right, 2 Chronicles chapter 18. Chronicles I read through a while back, and it seems like there are so many wonderful old stories in there. Some of them are dismal, bleak stories. Some are encouraging. Some are... But Chronicles is a... Both books are interesting. At least they were to me. We're going to talk about Jehoshaphat. He was 35 years old when he started to reign. So he'd have been a little older than I am, and he reigned for 25 years. And the Bible actually has a lot of good things to say about him. It seems he was a God-fearing man for the most part, and Judah seemed to prosper under his reign. But I think he failed a little bit in this chapter in the fact that he let the influence of an evil king into his life, and it kind of put a little bit of a bleak spot on his reputation for a while, even to this day. So Israel and Judah, you had Israel in the north part of Israel and then Judah in the south. They didn't always get along. When I think of the Israelites, I think of one big happy band of people walking around knocking down Jericho's walls. But that's not how it always was. They kind of had a civil war going on there for a while with each other. Anyway, so we had Jehoshaphat was ruling the southern part in Judah, and we had King Ahab in the northern part. And if you read in chapter 17, Jehoshaphat did some things to protect his country from Ahab, as far as building walls and trying to protect himself from them. But he had a son. Okay, he got rich. They were prosperous, and got rich. And he had this son that it was time to get him married off to, get him married. And he was a wealthy man. He couldn't just pick a nobody, could he? So he goes over to the northern kingdom, and he picks Ahab's daughter to marry his son. This king he was supposedly trying to protect himself from, trying to keep their bad influence out of his country, he goes and marries his son to their daughter. So apparently somewhere he started thinking it was a good idea to align with these people. And by the way, it was very likely, well, there's some speculation here, but some people seem to think it's likely it was Jezebel's daughter, so for whatever that's worth. All right, so that brings us to chapter 18, and it's a long chapter. I know what it's like when a preacher stands up here and just drones through a long chapter, and it's not always very interesting, but I think we're going to read the whole chapter, whether we do it in sections or all at one time. Well, let's just start reading at once. 18, verse 1. Now Jehoshaphat had riches and honor in abundance, and he joined affinity with Ahab. And after certain years, he went down to Ahab to Samaria. And Ahab killed sheep and oxen for him in abundance. For the people that he had with him persuaded him to go up with him to Ramoth Gilead. And Ahab, king of Israel, said unto Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, Wilt thou go with me to Ramoth Gilead? And he answered him, I am as thou art, and my people as thy people, and we will be with thee in war. And Jehoshaphat said unto the king of Israel, Inquire, I pray thee, at the word of the Lord today. Therefore the king of Israel gathered together of prophets 400 men and said unto them, Shall we go to Ramoth Gilead to battle, or shall I forbear? And they said, Go up, for the Lord will deliver it into the king's hand. But Jehoshaphat said, Is there not here a prophet of the Lord beside, that we might inquire of him? And the king of Israel said unto Jehoshaphat, There is yet one man by whom we may inquire of the Lord. But I hate him, for he never prophesied good unto me, but always evil. The same is Micaiah, the son of Imlah. And Jehoshaphat said, Let not the king say so. And the king of Israel called for one of his officers and said, Fetch quickly Micaiah, the son of Imlah. And the king of Israel and Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, sat either of them on his thrones, clothed in their robes, and they sat in a void place at the entering in of the gates of Samaria, and all the prophets prophesied before them. And Zedekiah, the son of Shenan, made him horns of iron and said, Thus saith the Lord, With these thou shalt push Syria until they be consumed. And all the prophets prophesied so, saying, Go up to Ramoth Gilead and prosper, for the Lord shall deliver it into the hands of the king. And the messenger that went to call Micaiah spake unto him, saying, Behold, the words of the prophet declare good to the king with one assent. Let thy word, therefore, I pray thee, be like one of theirs, and speak thou good. And Micaiah said, As the Lord liveth, even what my God saith, that will I speak. And when he was come to the king said unto him, Micaiah, shall we go to Ramoth Gilead to battle, or shall I forbear? And he said, Go ye up and prosper, and ye shall be delivered into the, and they shall be delivered into your hand. And the king said unto him, How many times shall I adjure thee that thou say nothing but the truth to me in the name of the Lord? Then he said, I did see Israel scattered upon the mountains as sheep that have no shepherd. And the Lord said, These have no master. Let them return, therefore, every man to his house in peace. And the king of Israel said to Jehoshaphat, Did I not tell thee that he would not prophesy good unto me, but evil? Again he said, Therefore hear the word of the Lord. I saw the Lord standing upon his throne, and all the host of heaven standing on his right hand and on his left. And the Lord said, Who shall entice Ahab, the king of Israel, that he may go up and fall at Ramoth Gilead? And one spake, saying after this manner, and another after that manner. And then there came out a spirit and stood before the Lord and said, I will entice him. And the Lord said, Wherewith? And he said, I will go out and be a lying spirit in the mouth of all his prophets. And the Lord said, Thou shalt entice him, and thou shalt also prevail. Go out and do even so. Now therefore, before the Lord, behold, the Lord hath put a lying spirit in the mouth of these thy prophets, and the Lord hath spoken evil against thee. And Zedekiah the son of Shannon came near and smote Micaiah on the cheek and said, Which way went the Spirit of the Lord from me to speak unto thee? And Micaiah said, Behold, thou shalt see on the day that thou shalt go into the inner chamber to hide thyself. And the king of Israel said, Take ye Micaiah and carry him back to Ammon, the governor of the city, and Joash the king's son. And say thus, Thus said the king, Put this fellow into prison, and feed him with the bread of affliction and with the water of affliction until I return in peace. And Micaiah said, If thou certainly return in peace, then hath not the Lord spoken by me. And he said, Hearken, all ye people. Maybe we'll stop there for now. We'll finish up the story later. So, going back in the beginning there, I think Ahab had this party for Jehoshaphat kind of with a secret agenda almost. He had this party almost as a flattery for him to make him feel good, to get him on his side, because there was this city that the Syrians had taken called Ramoth Gilead, kind of a long, weird name for a city. And it was a thorn in these people's flesh that these Syrians came in there and they took this city. And he needed help, he thought. He didn't like them controlling what he thought they stole from him. And at Ahab's party for Jehoshaphat turned out just the way he wanted it, because he got this man on his side. He talked Jehoshaphat into gathering his army and going with him. And he said, wilt thou go with me? And he answered, I am as thou art, and my people as thy people, and we will be with thee in war. So here we go. We're together now. We're gonna go do this together. He didn't ask God before, or it doesn't seem like he asked God if he should go. He just went. Ahab influenced him. So they called these prophets together. Let's make as sure as we can that the Lord's going to be with us. So we get 400 prophets together. So there was, 260 people here last Sunday? That was a crowd of people. There was more people than that, and these were prophets. So I don't know what the criteria was to be a prophet in those days. I kind of doubt they pulled up just any tramp off the street and said, you're a prophet. It was probably, I don't know if they were educated people, but they were probably confident men, would be my guess. They weren't people out of the slums. And these prophets all got together, and they were all excited to tell the king exactly what he wanted to hear. And they told him exactly what he wanted to hear. And going to verse 6 and 7, I found it kind of interesting that the king of Jehoshaphat wasn't too impressed with these 400 prophets for whatever reason. And he said, surely there's got to be a man of God. So were these other 400 prophets apparently weren't men of God. At least not in Jehoshaphat's mind. And he said, surely there's one more. And it's interesting, Ahab knew that there was another one, and Jehoshaphat acted like he asked for one. Whether he knew about Micaiah, I don't know. But Ahab didn't like Micaiah. That was very obvious. He said, that guy's never said a good thing about me. Why would I tell him, I have these 400 on my side, why would I tell this one to come from over here and tell me what? He doesn't like me anyway. He ain't going to tell me what I want to hear. The real problem was not that Micaiah was a bad prophet. The real problem was that Ahab was doing a bunch of bad things, and Micaiah just happened to get in the way and tell him when he was going wrong. And Ahab didn't like that. And you can almost see Jehoshaphat in the end of verse 7 there turn to Ahab and say, don't talk like that. Let's hear this prophet out and see what he's going to say. Godly prophets in those days did not have a easy life. They had a very rough existence, really. Anyway, they went and they fetched him quickly, it says. I don't know exactly, but either he lived very local or likely he was already in prison and they just went and got him. So you have these two kings there in verse 9. They're sitting there in their fine robes. And there's 400 prophets egging them on to go do this, capture this city again. Can't you see them prancing around, putting a show on for the king? Let's go. Come on, we can do it. One of them, I don't know, he seemed like a head prophet maybe of some kind or somebody in charge. He even made a iron horns and said, you're going to, I don't know, you can almost imagine him dancing around like a bull saying, we're going to chase these people out of here. And yeah, he had a visual there for the king. And you had all 400 prophets saying the same thing. We're going to do it. Go. And here comes poor Micaiah. And in verse 12, the man that fetched him said, look, we got this show going on for the king. Everybody's on the same side. Please, I'm begging you, tell this king the same thing that the other prophets are telling him. Please, don't mess up this party. We're ready to go, and you could throw a damper on this whole thing. Don't mess it up. You're the one and only thing that might slow us down. Don't throw a wrench in the gears and don't be a stuck-up stick in the mud. And so, you know what? Micaiah did. He told him exactly what he wanted to hear. Listen to what Micaiah said in verse 14. He said, "Go up, prosper, and they'll be delivered into your hands." Isn't that kind of interesting? But apparently, he said it in a very sarcastic way that the king caught on to. And the king, apparently the king knew he was pulling his leg, if you want to say it that way. And yeah, he says, go ahead, go do it. Give it a whirl, see what happens. And the king wasn't very happy with that answer. You'd think he got what he asked for. Why didn't you go? The king didn't like it. He said, come on, how many times do I have to adjure you? And that word adjure means, has the idea of swearing or making an oath. So how many times do I have to beg you to tell me the truth of what God tells you? He wanted so bad to hear what God had to say, but yet he was scared of it. You ever find yourself in that position? I do every now and then. So in verse 16, Micah explains pretty quickly, and it's not very hard to read between the lines. He explains exactly what God said. He said he sees the sheep scattered having no shepherd. And Ahab at this moment happened to be the Israelite shepherd, so that wasn't too hard to figure out. And Ahab, you can almost see him turn to Jehoshaphat. See, I told you this guy. He never prophesies anything good for me. I told you it was going to be this way. He's always been like this. He's not going to change now. He never says anything good about me. And I have 400 on my side versus one. We're going to go do this anyway. We're going to go do it anyway. Pretty good odds if you have 400 prophets to one saying, go do it. And I think Micaiah knew. Micaiah could have stopped right there. He could have stopped talking, and that was it. But I think he was on a roll, and he knew he was going to jail anyway, so he figured he might as well get it all out and just say the way it's going to be. And he tells the king his vision of what he's seen. He's seen all these people in heaven standing around God, and God's saying, I'm done with Ahab. I'm done with him on earth. He's an evil man. I'm going to send him to Ramoth Gilead, and I'm going to have the Syrians take him out. And God's almost asking for ideas. How are we going to do this? Does anybody have any suggestions on how we're going to do it? And you have several spirits seemingly giving God ideas on how to do it. And one spirit came up and said, I have an idea. And God says, what is it? And he says, I'm going to go put a lying spirit in the mouth of all his prophets. A lying spirit. And God says, you know what? That plan will work. Go do it. And that's exactly what happened. All 400 prophets had a lying spirit, and they gave Ahab advice that ultimately ended his life. In verse 23, you see this horn-building guy, this Zedekiah guy, Zedekiah, however you say that name, was not very impressed with this prophecy that Micaiah gave. He did not like this at all, because if he was wrong, and he was giving the king life and death advice like this, it wasn't going to be good for him. Anyway, it sure got under this guy's skin, and he walked over and smacked Micaiah on the cheek. And he said, tell me, where did the Spirit of God, well, let's just read that. Which way went the Spirit of the Lord from me to speak to thee? Trying to prove to everybody that he had the Spirit of God. And Micaiah gave him some pretty choice words and told him that he'll figure that out when he goes into hiding in the inner chamber. Anyway, Micaiah got sent back to prison, and they was told to feed him nothing but bread and water for his trouble. What a reward for saying exactly what God laid on your heart, the bread and water of affliction. Ahab said, put him in prison and don't pull him out until I come back in peace. And you can almost see Micaiah throwing it over his shoulder on the way out, that if you actually come back in peace, then you'll know it wasn't God speaking through me. But we all know how this story ends, I think. Let's read verses 28 through 34. This was after all this had gone on, and they were ready to go to battle. So the king of Israel and Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah, went up to Ramoth-Gilead. And the king of Israel said unto Jehoshaphat, I will disguise myself and will go into battle, but put thou on thy robes. So the king of Israel disguised himself and went to battle. Now the king of Syria had commanded the captains of the chariots that were with him, saying, fight ye, not with small or great, save only with the king of Israel. And it come to pass, when the captains of the chariots saw Jehoshaphat, that they said, it is the king of Israel. Therefore they compassed him about to fight. But Jehoshaphat cried out, and the Lord helped him, and God moved them to depart from him. For it came to pass that when the captains of the chariots perceived that it was not the king of Israel, they turned back again from pursuing him. And a certain man drew a bow at a venture, and smote the king of Israel between the joints of the harness. Therefore he said to his chariot man, turn thine hand, that they may carry me out of the host, for I am wounded. And the battle increased that day. However, the king of Israel stayed himself up in his chariot against the Syrians until the even, and about the time of the sun going down, he died. All right, verse 29. What a buddy. What a buddy of Jehoshaphat, this King Ahab. I tell you what, Jehoshaphat, I'm going to dress up like a common ordinary soldier so nobody recognizes me. And you go ahead and put on your kingly robes and let's go into battle. Does that sound like a friend to you? Doesn't sound like one I'd want to have. And what's interesting is Jehoshaphat went along with it. What was wrong with this guy? He may as well have painted a bullseye on Jehoshaphat's back. I mean, why didn't Jehoshaphat say, you're kidding me? If you're making me go into battle with my crown and my robes on or however, you're wearing it too. If I'm wearing robes to this show, you are too. But he didn't. He just listened to Ahab, and away they went. The Syrian generals were not dumb, apparently. And they knew the trouble and the instigator of this all was Ahab. And they gave special instructions. It seems like they weren't even out to kill more than Ahab. They had their target set on Ahab, and they said, Ahab is the man we want. All we're going to do is look for this guy, and we're going to take him. And then they knew they could all go back home if they got him. And as we go through the story, they found the one with the fancy clothes, and they gathered around him. They thought we had him. And it turned out to be Jehoshaphat. And all of a sudden, Jehoshaphat remembered he really needed God. He didn't need Ahab. He didn't need Ahab's army. He didn't need his army. He needed God. And God, in his mercy, reached down and spared him. The Syrians were obviously close enough to get a facial recognition, or somehow they suddenly realized this was not the right guy that we're after, and they let him go. They turned back from pursuing him. So apparently Jehoshaphat was running. And verse 33 is when the battle took a turn for the worse for Mr. Ahab. A certain man, it's kind of interesting, wasn't even aiming for him, just kind of haphazardly drew back his bow and flung an arrow, and it caught him right in the seam of his armor. Lucky shot, or maybe not. I think God knew what he was doing. God knew that he was done with Ahab, and he died that night just like Micaiah prophesied. Jehoshaphat went home to some very choice words from his prophet in 19:2. He kind of got an earful from him. He was probably rather ashamed of himself. I don't know if he was or not, but he should have been if he wasn't, that he let this king influence him to go do this the way this whole story happened. All because he let King Ahab, he was against him to start with. He was building walls against this man. And all of a sudden, he let this influence slowly work into his life, and it almost cost him his life. One thing I do want to point out, a lot of times when we talk about this influence thing, we talk about it in kind of a negative way. And this story has a lot of negative influence in it. And I'd like to focus more on the positive part of influence this morning. But one thing I do want to point out is that Jehoshaphat did have a positive influence on Ahab in the fact that he at least talked him into listening to a prophet of God. He at least persuaded him to get one more godly prophet in there. So there's a lot of bad influences in this story. But I did want to bring that out, that there was, Jehoshaphat did have a positive influence on Ahab. So coming to today and our influence on each other, I know that I myself underestimate the power of other people's influence on my lives. I just do. They say your net worth is within 10% of your 10 closest friends throughout your life. Do we all sit down and think we're going to, let's all have my 10 closest friends, and we're going to all try and stick together on this? That's not how it works. It just naturally happens. You tend to become who you hang around with. I wonder if our spiritual knowledge and understanding is within 10% of our 10 closest friends. I'll bet it is. I would like to suggest it probably is. Husbands and wives probably have more influence on each other than anybody else, just due to the fact that we obviously live in the same house and have a very close relationship with each other. The influence of siblings. It's amazing the influence of brother on brother. I see it in my house all the time. What one little geezer does, the other one will try to do. And you know what? If one of them decides to be destructive, they can both be destructive. And you know what? It works the other way too. If one of them decides to get with it and pick up the toys, the other one gets with it. They influence each other. It works both ways. And I think it's amazing, and I think we as Christians underestimate the power of what we can all do if we come together with one accord and we're willing to influence each other for good. I think there's a lot that can be done. There's people that influenced my life today that I've never met, and I won't until I'm in eternity. Do you ever think about your grandpa and his grandpa and his grandpa and their wives, all the way back to Noah? Did you ever think about it, that we're all here because of Noah kept his faith and he influenced his sons and daughters to the point where they went against the entire world and climbed into a massive homemade vehicle, the like of which the world had never seen before? Noah influenced his family enough that he persuaded them to get into this contraption with him. I shouldn't call it a contraption. God designed it. But it was a wooden boat, something that, yeah, they'd never seen anything like that. But Noah and his positive influence talked them into joining him on that. And he influenced that outcome influenced mankind for thousands of years. I couldn't help but think about, I'm not real much into history, but the older I get, the more interested I do become in it. And I know my, I don't know how many greats back it is, but it was Jacob and Barbara came from Germany in the mid-1800s, and those that's where my ancestor line comes from. Jacob and Barbara Gingrich. It was a big deal, I'm sure, for them to leave Germany. To me, I'm just in America. That's just all I know. But they left everything to come to America. Their friends, their farms, and everything that was familiar. And I don't know why, all the reasons for why they came. But if you look at the history of the Mennonites and the Amish in Germany, it's kind of bleak. It's kind of bleak. I don't know if there's any what we would consider conservative Mennonite churches in Germany today or not. I'm kind of under the impression there's not, but there might be something I'm missing there. I'm not saying there's not Christians, but as far as Mennonites and Amish like we would know them, I don't know that there is any. So, yeah, all the reasons why he came, him and his wife loaded up and came over, I don't know. But if they would have stayed there, I often wondered where I'd be today. Where would I be today if they would have stayed there? Why, I have so many questions. Maybe one of these days I'll get to ask him what all the reasonings were. But I had to wonder if he's seen things happening in Germany he didn't like in the... Was it more politically minded? Was it more the way he's seen the Amish and Mennonite churches going is why he left? And I've often wondered too, why do my roots have to come from Germany? I mean, that's where Hitler came from. If we're going to come from Europe, let's come from somewhere neat like Holland or Switzerland or something. But anyway, here I am and I'm a German, I guess. I guess they make BMWs and Mercedes and they make some neat things. So maybe it's not too... No, I'm not embarrassed of it. I'm not. They're known for being good builders and designers, and if it's made in Germany, it's usually good. So there's lots of good there. But what if great-great-great-great-grandpa had stayed there? Where would I be? I find it, y'all have heard this too, I'm sure, but there was several letters that were wrote to Hitler from the Mennonite church supporting the man. Would have I been a Nazi if he'd have stayed there? You know what I mean? You just have to wonder, where would I be? There was many young men that were sucked into Hitler's army. I don't know if any of y'all have ever heard that man speak or not, like recordings of it, but there's recordings of Hitler talking that you can listen to. And that man, I can't understand it, but he can talk. He can talk. And there was many a young man that got sucked into his army and went and did his bidding because of his powers of communication. How do I know if Grandpa wouldn't have stayed there, what kind of influence it might have been on my life? Talk about Hitler's influence on the world. I've often wondered how much worse the world would be off if the Billy Grahams and the Dwight Moodys would have used their powers of communication like Hitler did his. And how much better would the world be if Hitler would have used his powers of communication for God instead of for evil? Where would we be? What if Hitler would have became a Christian and influenced through his words thousands of people? I know it's just speculation, but you gotta wonder. Anyway, for whatever reason, Grandpa and Granny got on the boat and they left Germany, and here I am today because of that choice that he made. If they'd have stayed there, likely I'd have never met any of y'all. I might have never even met anybody from Arkansas. And now, that's all speculation, a lot of it. But I want to ask y'all this morning, and this is what Daniel alluded to in his devotional. where are your children and my children and my grandchildren and my great-great-grandchildren going to be because of the decisions you make today and the influence that you have on their lives? See, great-grandpa influenced grandpa, and grandpa influenced dad, and dad influenced me. So in a way, I'm living under what great-great-grandpa taught. What are your children and what are my great-great-grandchildren, if the Lord tarries, going to learn, and how are they going to be living their lives different, and how's it going to be better? How can we make it better today? First Corinthians 15:33, be not deceived. Evil communications corrupt good manners. Basically, it's saying evil company messes up your character. No matter who you are and no matter who I am, we're influencing somebody today. And we're doing it in a positive or a negative way. An old African proverb says, if you think you're too small to have any influence, try spending one night in a closed room with a mosquito. Or maybe in Arkansas, it'd be try taking a nap on a Sunday afternoon with one fly in the house. Maybe that's bringing it a little bit closer home. But little drops of positive influence and encouragement can have amazing upbuilding consequences. In closing here, Proverbs 13:20. He that walketh with wise men shall be wise, but a companion of fools shall be destroyed. I guess my challenge for myself, first of all, this morning, and all of us, who we're around does make a difference on our lives, and who and the people that hang around us are influenced by us, whether we like it or not. And it's not that we're not going to influence them, like Daniel said this morning. It's what's it going to be? Is it going to be good or bad? It's kind of scary, especially for us moms and dads that have little ones in the house. It's a big deal. And so we just live our lives, and they learn from us, and I'm not as intentional as I should be about it. But it does make a difference. That's all I have for the message this morning. Why don't we kneel for prayer?